Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida legislature moves forward to significantly restrict abortion on a day that is not without irony.
Today, January 22nd, we commemorate the 47th anniversary of the landmark legal decision Roe v. Wade.
Also tonight, state senators want to ban cities from banning sunscreens. Meanwhile, the Florida Association of Counties opposes the bill, but more so the fundamentals of it.
At the heart of the issue is not the preemption itself and the control of the policy. It's more of that the government remain accessible and efficient to the community.
We'll also get updates on Florida's lifetime alimony requirement, and Space Florida is going where it's gone many times before. 2 days to go in the second week of the 2020 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. On the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, a bill requiring parental consent for a minor's abortion passed its last committee stop. The measure will now be headed to the floor as we hear from Robbie Gaffney.
Today, January 22nd, we commemorate the 47th anniversary of the landmark legal decision Roe v. Wade.
Charo Valero is Florida director of the National Latina Institute. She's speaking at a press conference, and surrounding her are Democratic lawmakers and abortion rights advocates.
In Florida, today, the Senate Rules Committee also voted to pass Senate Bill 404.
The bill Valero is referring to would require parental or guardian consent for a minor's abortion. It's sponsored by Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell. During the proposal's last committee stop, Democratic lawmakers asked a lot of questions.
Why is it that the title is being amended to an act relating to abortion?
Miami Democratic Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez says a bill's title determines what can be done with it. Rodriguez worries that opens the door for more issues to be added into the bill.
Every proposal related to abortion that might be considered, including a total ban, including what other states have done with trigger laws or six-week bans, to be proposed on the Senate floor for an up or down vote to expand the scope of the bill to include those things.
Stargell agrees it could happen, but says she's not planning to add more abortion restrictions.
I would be very hesitant to add a provision such as you're talking about, which is a total ban, which I think at this point would be deemed unconstitutional.
Other concerns raised by Democrats include penalties on physicians. If an abortion is happening and the baby is alive during or after the procedure, under Florida law, the physician must take them to the hospital. If the physician doesn't do that, they get a first-degree misdemeanor. Under Stargell's bill, the penalty increased to a third-degree felony. Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Perry Thurston.
The difference that you're changing here is from 12 months in a county jail to 5 years in a state prison system. Is that our intention? Because that's what this change does.
If they do not take care of a baby that is born alive and let it lay there and die on the table, then yes, they would be subject to 5 years.
That's Stargell again. She says staff working with a physician who does this would also get a third-degree felony. The committee voted 9-7 in favor of the bill, with Democrats opposed. It is now heading to the floor. Senate President Bill Gavano says in about 2 weeks, the full chamber will vote on the proposal.
I think it's an important piece of legislation, and I'm glad to see it come out of the Rules Committee, and we'll take it to the floor next week.
Gavano also says it's likely the House will pick up the Senate version of the measure. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
One of the first bills ready to be voted on by the full Senate is a bill stopping local governments from regulating sunscreen. It's one of several preemption bills that have been filed this session. Blaise Ganey has the details.
Orange Park Republican Senator Rob Bradley sponsors Senate Bill 172, which prevents cities from banning sunscreen.
People who travel to Florida come here to spend time outside. We're the Sunshine State. Unfortunately, some local governments have considered banning certain types of sunscreen, and Key West actually has done this.
Key West has banned certain sunscreens due to a belief some ingredients harm coral reefs. Bradley doesn't buy it. He cited a state report that was done last year.
They reviewed all these studies about coral reefs and the potential negative effects of oxybenzone and octinoxate. And what they concluded was that any negative effects of those ingredients on coral would happen at concentration levels that are not normally found in nature.
But Key West commissioners want to be able to make their own decision. Here's Florida Association of Counties spokeswoman Jennifer Laxner.
For us, what's important moving forward is just to continue working with the bill sponsors on this issue and on future preemption issues.
Laxner says the sunscreen preemption bill isn't just about sunscreen.
At the heart of the issue is not the preemption itself and the control of the policy. It's more of that the government remain accessible and efficient to the community. Matters can be handled at the local level instead of needing to navigate the state legislative process.
The legislature has overridden local officials on everything from guns to minimum wages. Last year, lawmakers passed a measure that would stop local bans on single-use plastic straws, but it was vetoed by Governor Ron DeSantis.
He sort of backed up the counties being proactive in this issue and gave it some validity.
Senate Bill 172 is on its third reading in the Senate, and the House version is in its third committee stop. I'm Blaise Ganey.
Clifford Williams says he relied on his faith during more than four decades behind bars, including 5 years on Florida's death row. Williams, now 77, gave God the credit for his release from prison after state prosecutors found he and his nephew were wrongly convicted of the 1976 Jacksonville murder of a woman and the attempted murder of her girlfriend. After serving almost 43 years in prison, Williams was set free last year. Now he's hoping that Florida lawmakers will agree to compensate him for the time he lost while he was locked up. State Representative Kimberly Daniels is sponsoring Williams' claims bill in the Florida House of Representatives. Under a Florida law passed in 2008, the state may pay people who have been wrongly imprisoned $50,000 for every year they were incarcerated, up to a maximum of $2 million. The law, though, excludes individuals like Williams who have prior felony convictions. Still to come on Capitol Report, requiring Florida employers to use E-Verify to confirm prospective employees are legally in the U.S., moves forward in the legislature, although there may be still devilish details to be worked out.
The challenge that exists is in the challenge of its implementation.
There's a frontal legislative assault on the whole concept of lifetime alimony payments when a marriage heads south.
I didn't even know what alimony was until I was forced to pay a large amount, which I wasn't able to handle. Soon I lost my business, my house, and my car.
And one lawmaker says Florida's role in space exploration should be remembered.
He couldn't find anywhere where space travel, space exploration, all of the wins and the losses in that space were essentially memorialized.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by Cloud Navigator, providing cloud computing services and creating secure and productive workplaces for businesses and government agencies. Cloud Navigator, a Microsoft Cloud Platform partner operating throughout the Southeast. On the web at cloudnav.com.
A decade ago, a fight broke out in Florida over whether to require businesses to use the federal E-Verify system to ensure employees are eligible to work in the United States. The solution at the time was an executive order by then-Governor Rick Scott to require E-Verify for state workers. Now, as Lynn Hatter tells us, the idea is back, pitched by Governor Ron DeSantis.
Last year, DeSantis was able to get Florida lawmakers to pass rules banning so-called sanctuary cities. A large part of his gubernatorial campaign was geared at cracking down on unauthorized immigration, no matter that those rates have declined over the past decade.
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired."
That's an ad from DeSantis' gubernatorial campaign. In it, he teaches his daughter how to build a wall, a callback to President Donald Trump's anti-immigration slogan. This year, DeSantis is trying to get the Florida legislature to mandate both public and private employers use the federal government's E-Verify system to verify a person's work eligibility.
This is the law that's in existence, so it's basically a mechanism to make sure that we have a legal workforce. It's not changing existing eligibility law, it's just making sure it's being enforced.
Here we are, you know, I've spent 10 years in the Senate, and we're still continuing to talk about this issue. And there doesn't seem to be, we don't seem to be any closer to a consensus on how to find a balance between welcoming immigrants and ensuring that we have safety.
Republican Senator Ana Terry Flores has seen this fight before. Back when former governor and now U.S. Senator Rick Scott settled for an executive order when it became clear there wasn't enough Republican support to mandate E-Verify for private businesses.
The challenge that exists is in the challenge of its implementation. How do we make it so that employers, be it in the private sector or in the public sector, are not overly burdened with this from a time perspective, from a cost perspective. And again, we have to realize this is a federal program. We're not in charge of it.
Flores's concerns echo those of Senate President Bill Galvano.
At the heart of my caution is the additional burden on private entities. I've not read the bill, but I understand that it's more of a move to try to limit to government entities and things of that nature. It may be something that could help us find a middle ground.
Speaking of middle ground, Republican Senator and Party Chairman Joe Gruters and Representative Cord Byrd have filed bills that act as potential middle grounds. They require state employers, contractors, and subcontractors to use the E-Verify system. Private businesses would have to ensure their employees are eligible to work in the United States, but they can do so through other mechanisms. Flores says that may be a lot more palpable to the Senate.
I think that the compromise, so to speak, of starting off with the public sector, I think that's reasonable, and I think that's something that would probably pass. Because then again, at that point, then you have the government saying, okay, before we impose this on the private sector, we're going to do it ourselves first.
But will Governor DeSantis be willing to compromise? Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez says DeSantis has been clear on his position.
We'll just continue to monitor and see what comes out of the Senate and of the House. And at that point, I guess the governor will make his determination whether he feels it's sufficient enough in terms of his priority.
I'm Lynn Hatter.
Republican state legislators are trying to abolish Florida's permanent alimony system. Ryan Daly reports a bill would place caps on the duration of payments, but a Florida bar section is opposing the changes.
In the House, Representative Alex Andrade is carrying a bill that would prioritize the short-term bridge-the-gap alimony system in lieu of lifetime payments to an ex-spouse.
Alimony in the state currently is, Florida's lagging behind nationally. We're one of six states that still allows for lifetime alimony, and our statutes allow for a significant amount of judicial discretion. That's not subject to any stringent appellate review.
Andrade's bill passed its first stop Wednesday. The House Civil Justice Subcommittee approved the measure on a party-line vote with Republicans in favor. Andrade said the wide-ranging bill looks to do two main things.
It seeks to incentivize relationships after a divorce in two ways. One, by not counting the income of an obligor, the person paying alimony. The income of their new spouse or partner cannot be imputed to their income to increase an alimony payment to a prior spouse. And it also includes a 180-day look back if the obligee, the person receiving alimony payments, has entered into what's called a dependent relationship.
The proposal also places caps on the two other forms of alimony in Florida: rehabilitative alimony, which is meant to be temporary support to help the receiving party get financially stable, would be limited to 5 years. Durational alimony, a more long-term version meant for dependent ex-spouses, would be capped at half the length of the marriage. Another key piece of Andrade's bill, it frees the party paying alimony payments from doing so when they reach retirement age.
To allow people, when they reach retirement age, to retire with dignity and not be subject to potentially a contempt order and being placed in jail for failing to pay an alimony payment.
Michelle Klinger-Smith is an attorney who spoke on behalf of the Florida Bar's family law section, which opposes the measure. She points out, despite striking the definition of permanent alimony from statutory language, it still states permanent alimony can still be awarded if agreed upon by both parties.
Striking the language as to what permanent alimony is will create havoc in the future as to what permanent alimony can be agreed upon.
Klinger-Smith also warned the House panel that capping alimony payments might lead people to try to get money from an ex-spouse in other ways.
Will this in turn cause those spouses to fight for more assets because they know their alimony is going to be capped?
The bar's family law section also opposes a provision of the bill that states a presumption of equal time sharing of minor children after a divorce is in the child's best interest.
We are adamantly opposed to 50-50% time sharing. The presumption. Currently, there is no presumption for or against. We want to keep it that way. Every case is unique.
Several speakers came to Tallahassee to speak in support of the bill, like Natalie Willis.
I am a lifetime alimony payer. I divorced 13 years ago over my ex-husband's refusal to work or take care of the home. I didn't even know what alimony was until I was forced to pay a large amount, which I wasn't able to handle. Soon I lost my business, my house, and my car. My lowest point, I had to borrow money for gas so I can go to work.
Willis shared her story, which included a detail found in some other speakers' accounts as well. Her ex-spouse intentionally forewent income in order to keep getting alimony payments.
I've never been anti-alimony. I wanted to help my ex-husband. I hoped that we could remain friendly to each other because we once were in love and we have three children. But for the past 13 years, my ex has remained purposefully unemployed.
An identical bill in the Senate, carried by Republican Kelly Stargell, is waiting for its first hearing. I'm Ryan Daly.
Ira Glass, creator, producer, and host of This American Life, will be at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg on Saturday, January 25th. WUSF's Lisa Peeks talked with Glass about his creative process, the current media landscape, and his commitment to helping young journalists.
Ira Glass, creator, producer, and host of This American Life, will be at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg Saturday. I talked to him about his creative process, the current media landscape, and his commitment to helping young journalists.
I mean, I relate to them. You know, like, I know that's a weird thing to say. I'm 60 years old. But, like, it really took me a long time to get the craft of reporting and making stories down. And so I feel like there are certain things that I wish somebody had said to me.
What do you want them to know?
I mean, it's a mix of just like, it's normal to be bad for a while and you really have to focus on certain things, including just noticing like what is amusing to you and what's interesting to you in the story and just cultivating that in yourself. I wish somebody had told me that. Like when you're learning journalism, everybody's so worried, you know, that you're not going to get the facts right, that nobody actually goes to the part that's the more important part, which is to notice where your curiosity is and where you're excited and what you're excited to make. And kind of the more you follow that, the better off you're going to be and the better and more memorable your work is going to be.
I don't know if you've heard this before or not, but a lot of people imitate you. There's a lot of product out there that assumes the same cadence in the voice and they try to essentially be like you. Now, how do you respond to that?
I have heard that and I have noticed it certainly myself. How do I respond? Well, that certainly wasn't my intent. when I started making my own radio show, I think anybody sounds better on the air the more they sound like they are when they really talk. And so I simply try to design a way to do stories where I can talk on the air the way I really talk in real life.
So you're going to be talking about seven things that you've learned. What prompted the theme?
What prompted the theme was I needed to write a speech, and I thought seven things I've learned could be a solid sounding sort of container for whatever I would want to say. And so when I give the speech, generally I'll change up the seven things depending on my mood. And it's a mix of just it's really entertaining stories that is really fun to tell in front of an audience, some of which are big things I've learned and some of which are just like things that I've learned that are just so small. But there's a really funny story to go with it.
Why seven?
It just sounded good. I don't have a smart thing to say about why seven. It just seemed like it would sound good. And then after I did it, somebody was just like, well, there's the seven things of highly effective leaders, and there's the seven seals, and there's the seven. Seven apparently is like a number people are attracted to when they're trying to pretend that they have a thing.
Right. It sounds good. How has the storytelling landscape changed, say, in the past even 3 or 4 years?
Oh, so much. I mean, it's interesting to see the number of podcasts more than radio shows that have really built on some of the lessons that we learned in making stories of This American Life. I feel like when we went on the air in 1995, we were the only show out there that was like a weekly show trying to do journalism as narrative. That is, the stories would be journalistically sound, but they would be, stories like little movies where there'd be a plot and there'd be characters and they'd pull you in and they'd, pull you forward and they'd run towards ideas and feelings and they could be funny in addition to being serious and like that whole aesthetic. And most notably, I have to say, is the one the New York Times does called The Daily, which is very much designed as a show structured like our show, that is structured as narrative, but it's about the day's news that day.
What are some other ones?
The other one that I recommend to a lot of people besides The Daily is the show called Reply All, which ostensibly is about the internet and things happening on the internet. But really, that's just like a bucket that they put these things into. And I definitely have learned a lot of things about how the internet happens. But really, it's just a very entertainingly made and beautifully, beautifully edited show. And by that, I mean like just the stories they find are wonderful and they just really make them sing.
That was WUSF's Lisa Peek speaking with Ira Glass. There's a busy calendar for the Florida legislature tomorrow as we hear from Gina Jordan.
Here's what's coming up in the Florida legislature. A House bill would prohibit a political candidate from donating surplus campaign funds to a charitable organization that employs the candidate. Law enforcement officers would be able to park their work vehicles in certain areas without interference from homeowners or community associations. State attorneys in each judicial circuit could establish an elder abuse fatality review team composed of volunteers. The teams would review closed cases involving elder abuse or neglect and make recommendations to help prevent future fatalities. Student athletes may get new protections when it comes to preventing heat stroke. Members of the Florida High School Athletic Association would have to follow a list of protocols, like creating guidelines for keeping students well hydrated. The bill requires that someone trained to perform CPR and use a defibrillator be present at each athletic event. The defibrillator must be clearly marked and readily available. Finally, a proposal for a statewide Office of Resiliency gets its final committee hearing in the Senate. The bill would also create a sea-level rise task force. That's some of what's happening tomorrow at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
Governor DeSantis expressed support today for actions the federal government has taken in response to the deadly shooting at a Pensacola naval base last month. Speaking to reporters after a meeting with U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper at Naval Air Station Pensacola, DeSantis called post-attack steps from increased screening to the removal of 21 Saudi military students, including 12 at NAS Pensacola, very, very significant, adding, "We've got some incredible allies. That's obviously a good thing. You look at a country like Egypt, a lot of the people that came through and then trained in America are some of the people now in positions who are very pro-American. At the same time, though, we cannot be bringing people over here who want to do things like this within our country." Again, that was Governor Ron DeSantis. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a panel of lawmakers got a little spacey today as they discussed bonding opportunities for Space Florida and proposed a new Capitol monument. Regan McCarthy has that.
Since its creation in 2006, Space Florida has worked to promote the state's aerospace industry.
We are in Florida, I think, in the midst of a great renaissance with respect to space. If you look back 10 years ago, 8-10 years ago, down in a place like Cape Canaveral, you know, the space shuttle had been retired. The area was not looking great into the future. And then what we've seen, partially with the advent of technology, but partially with, you know, vision and leadership, is you have all these companies now coming into Florida.
Just last week, Governor Ron DeSantis announced the company Made in Space would be moving its corporate headquarters to Jacksonville. It's known for building 3D printers that are used to make replacement parts when something breaks on the International Space Station. DeSantis says it's a good example of the state's growing industry.
We're proud of what we offer in Florida. We do take pride in having a positive business climate. We want companies like this to succeed because we think that's more opportunity for the citizens of Florida, and we try to have policies that will do that.
Port Orange Republican Senator Tom Wright is pushing a proposal he thinks will fit right in with those policies. He wants to expand and streamline the ability for Space Florida to issue bonds.
Space Florida expects that issuing bonds will become a more viable and effective business development tool as we transition from working primarily with federal agencies.
Wright's bill expands what kinds of bonds would be available for the agency and removes some of the requirements for oversight from state groups like the cabinet. But Stewart Republican Senator Gail Harrell has concerns about who would then be responsible in the case of a default.
Bonds normally are issued with some kind of tax levy behind it. And there's usually a process whereby if there's a default, there is a payor at the end of the day. So who in this case, since we're eliminating the reporting to the cabinet and the governor, who is ultimately responsible if Space Florida defaults?
Wright assured Harrell Space Florida and any companies involved in the investment would be on the hook, not the state. Meanwhile, lawmakers in the same committee considered a measure by Bartow Republican Senator Ben Albritton to create a monument memorializing the state's involvement in space exploration. He says a constituent brought the idea to him.
He loves space, loves exploration, and he mentioned to me that he'd been at the Capitol recently and that he couldn't find anywhere where space travel, space exploration, all of the wins and the losses in that space were essentially memorialized. It's the right word.
Albritton has a bill to create a contest for designing a monument to space exploration in the Capitol building. It has two committee stops left to go. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Lisa Peaks. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag.